Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Indianapolis-based freelance jazz saxophonist Evan Drybread. His debut CD is the 2022 album Tiger Tail, and he is joined by a stellar lineup of cats like Mark Buscelli on trumpet and flugelhorn, Christopher Pitts on the keys, Scott Pizzera on the upright and electric bass, and Kenny Phelps on the drum kit. He performs with many of the finest musicians in the Midwest and frequents clubs like the Jazz Kitchen, Chatterbox, and many others. He's all over the place. He's on the rise. Enjoy the story.
So, hey, man, thanks for taking a minute for Neon Jazz. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's great to be talking to you.
Tiger Trail, your new CD is coming out during a time where things in 2 years haven't really happened, which is live music. Things are starting to wake up a little bit. How does this release feel for you?
Well, yeah, that actually really hits the nail on the head right there. You know, this was certainly something that I had wanted to do before the pandemic. I actually had just reached out to the piano player on the album, Christopher Pitts. He's one of my good friends, so he was the first one I called up to do this album, and I was just kind of getting in the exploratory phases. He played a lot of the tunes with me over the years, and so just right after I was talking about that, that's when things kind of got bad with the pandemic. So then I finally, you know, as things started to get a little better, that's when I was actually finally able to get into the studio and record all these tunes.
Speaking of, talk to me a little bit about the lineup on this album and kind of what you were going for.
I had a lot of people in mind. So Chris, he was, as I was saying, he was someone I really had in mind, especially like the tune Queen of Cups. That was one I sort of had written for him in mind because he's a piano player. He like really likes to take a lot of chances. So I gave him kind of a more modal tune to be playing, and I wanted to see the kind of things that he would create with that. So that was the thought with Chris. And then also with the lineup, I got Scott Pizzera. So he's a local bass player in town, actually lives up closer to Purdue University in Lafayette, Indiana. And I knew him from some time when I was up there studying. And he's just a monster electric player and also a monster upright player. So I wanted to have someone that was sort of like a dual threat on electric and upright. I kind of gave him a feature on the song Woodruff Place Town Hall, and he plays the one of my favorite solos of the set, just a really funky bass line. And then Kenny Phelps, he's on just about everyone's work around Indianapolis. He's basically just like solid as a rock, and he really swings. So he's the, I really had him in mind for a lot of the tunes as well, because anytime that he's on the session, just like the energy level just absolutely explodes. And then finally on trumpet and flugelhorn, he's perhaps probably one of my greatest mentors. He was He's the band director. He's the jazz band director. He's up at Ball State University. And so that's Mark Buscelli. He's one I studied with, even though I'm a saxophone player, I studied improv with him, studied arranging and composition with him as well. So naturally, I really wanted to have him on the album because not only is he an incredible writer, an incredible trumpet player, but you know, also an incredible mentor. I think that covered all the other people on the album. Just really great musicians I was so thrilled to have.
So let's talk a little bit about the listener's perspective. What do you hope they get? What do you hope they absorb from this album?
Well, I hope I kind of went for a different selection of tunes here. So I was hoping that there'd be just like a little bit of variety for people to listen to on here. So I was very much influenced by, of course, like the hard bop masters like Wayne Shorter, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, Lee Morgan, Freddie Hubbard, a lot of those guys. So I wrote a couple tunes on there that were really kind of in that style, like the opening track, Black Ball. I was trying to go for more of that sound right there, just a you know, a real swinging hard bop tune. But of course, I was also wanting to do something that was more like in the style of the John Coltrane Quartet, especially of the early 60s. And so that's actually the title track on the album, Tiger Tail. That one, that's sort of the impressions contrafact right there with a little bit different of the bridge, and it's in six, so that was very much inspired by those Coltrane tunes, and especially like the song Out of This World, his version of the great standard. So, but then also I've got a couple fusion tunes on there that really that featured some Fender Rhodes and electric bass, and I was wanting to also showcase those. I've got a tune, Woodruff Place Town Hall, on there, and that's something I wrote originally for a group in town called the Pork and Beans Brass Band. It's got brass band that's got that New Orleans brass band sound, and so I adapted that one to more of a jazz quintet setting. So I wanted to make sure I had like a funky tune right there. So I just wanted to make sure I had like a good variety of different tunes because I've been influenced by so many different great artists over the years. So I didn't want to just have like one theme for the album. And as we were talking about earlier, with COVID disrupting things, I had sort of a lot of unfinished projects that I hadn't gotten a chance to wrap up. And actually that title track, Tiger Tail, that was something I had written during the pandemic. So I was kind of a couple different phases of my life, stuff before the pandemic and also during the pandemic.
You know, Indianapolis is one of those towns that you don't hear a lot of jazz musicians are from. So I'm curious, talk to me a little bit about being in Indianapolis, growing up, and, you know, just kind of how jazz became your life.
Well, I think that's something a lot of people don't realize is it's maybe not as well known as a lot of other great cities in the country like New York and New Orleans. But we do have, you know, a small but I think a really dedicated jazz scene here. And we're really proud of the heritage we have because we have some pretty heavy hitters from here like Wes Montgomery and Freddie Hubbard and J.J. Johnson. So we definitely have a lot of pride and a strong tradition with those musicians. You know, that's still around today. We're lucky enough to have two jazz clubs in the city of Indianapolis that have jazz pretty much 7 days a week. They have some other genres that they host, but their heart and soul of those clubs, the Jazz Kitchen and the Chatterbox Jazz Club, those are, you know, really great places where you can go to a jam session. You know, you can sit in with different groups. So I definitely think, like, Indianapolis is developing its own sound. I just... It just doesn't get the amount of attention that I think it does deserve, but it is a nice close-knit community, and you know, we're all working on each other's projects a lot. And so, and of course, I think another thing that's really important is, not far away from Indianapolis is Indiana University School of Music. So there's always young musicians that are coming up to Indianapolis to sit in too, and some end up staying in Indiana, some end up moving on to other places, but. You know, there's kind of the core group of us that have been in Indy for a long time, and then there's always some incredible young talent also coming in all the time. A very cool situation over here that not a lot of people know about.
Sounds like it. So what was the first live jazz show that you ever saw that really inspired you?
Actually, it was near Butler University. There's a place in town called Broad Ripple. They're having a jazz fest. And so my dad's a bass player, so I grew up listening to a lot of like Weather Report and those kinds of groups. He was a big Jaco Pastorius fan. He and my mom took me to the Broad Ripple Jazz Festival. And it wasn't anything that was, there was no national act. It was just all local groups. And there was a saxophone player named Jim Fairley. And he was playing on the set, and that was the, I'd heard saxophone, I'd heard jazz on home at CDs, but this was the first time it really connected to me when I saw it actually like live. I used to play his album all the time. That was really what got me first going listening to jazz was Jim Fairley, and he still plays around town. He toured at the very end with the Stan Kenton Band. I think he was touring with them the last year they were in existence, and so he was definitely... the first person I saw was like, yeah, I want to play the saxophone.
You know, this is your debut album. You've been at this for a little while. I'm curious, what do you like the best about this process of being a professional musician?
Just the opportunity to meet and hang with all the cats in town. That's really always been my favorite part. Like, I love going down to the Chatterbox after, like, even if I'm just doing like a wedding gig or like sort of an events gig in town, you know, I want to keep doing music, even though when my gig is over. And I love just go down and hang with everyone at the box. Even if I'm sitting in, you know, if I'm just going, if I've played like a 5-hour gig and I just want to go there and, you know, listen to the other cats, those are my favorite thing, is just like making the connections with people and getting to share the stage with them. That's definitely, you know, it's a people business, and that's my favorite part of it.
So let's say we get off the phone, Jazz DeLorean pulls up, you can go anywhere in time in jazz history and see a performer. Where are you going? Who are you going to see?
You know, I did see Wayne Shorter with his current quartet, but I would love to go back in time and like see him play some of his Blue Note era music live. I would love to see that, and just about any of the Blue Note era musicians. I think that's still my favorite. I do love the jazz fusion era. It'd be cool to go see some of the music in the 70s, but you know, Blue Note, and then I think, like, you know, close to that too would be just to go see the greats like Dexter Gordon, Gene Ammon, see some of their music more like in the 50s era jazz. But
that's what I would really like to see. I think if I only got to pick one, was that Blue Note era, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, those guys.
So you've clearly dedicated your life to the jazz craft. What is it that you love about jazz?
I've just always loved the sound. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. At the end of the day, the jazz, just in the feeling and the expression, the sound of it is just kind of always what's gotten to me. I mean, that's my favorite thing to listen for in music, is just to kind of determine, like, what you just, even if I'm not looking at the liner notes, like, who is that saxophone player? Oh, that's obviously Dexter Gordon, because that is the sound right there. You know, I love listening to, that's one of my favorite things.
When we do kind of get back more, we talked about your debut and having the chance to perform it live, things opening up. What do you hope we all realize, both musician and the audience, about the power of live music as we get back to it?
Well, I think I certainly experienced this myself, but I don't want to take it for granted ever again, because it was something I just kind of just assumed that I could always be going into places like the Chatterbox and the Jazz Kitchen in town. And I just always assumed those doors would be open and I could get in there and see the band, or if, you know, if I was playing one of the gigs there, you know, I could just get there and be able to experience and share that space and that music, the people on stage and the band. And I just don't want to ever take that for granted again. So I'm hoping, like, in the future, we do whatever we can to protect live music. So whether that's more funding from arts councils, I just want to make sure that we make sure that these doors do not close, and make sure that we are always supporting our local businesses that do promote live music, because if there's no places to play, pandemic or not, then, you know, that music is not going to get out there.
So everyone has a perception or an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. Who do you think you are?
That's a good question. Who do I think I am? I just think I'm a musician trying to get through the world and try to, you know, actually, I do have a voice that I would like to express, and I'm trying to get that message out. So I think all the musicians that I've gotten to meet over the years, they have, you know, I was talking about how I always listen for their sound, their voice in the music. And I'm trying to, I guess, show that I also have a voice with this music. And that's what I'm trying to show the world, is this is what Evan Drybread sounds like.
Evan, thanks for taking some time out, man. Good luck with the debut and the return to the stage. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you so much. It was really awesome getting to talk with you. And I'm really so happy that you're getting a chance to spin the album. That's just beyond exciting to me.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest cats in Indianapolis, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Evan for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. And if you want more on Joe Domino, go to JoeDomino.com. And if you feel like it, you can kick in a few bucks for the Neon Jazz cause there. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.